Hello, SunSounds listeners. This is Andy Bombeck, which means, once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now for over 5 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled We Forgot Brock. And then it's Where Wonder Grows, Eyes That Weave the World's Wonders, My Code Word for When I'm Sad or Afraid, Emma's Circus, and if we have time, we'll finish up the first half hour with The Noisy Classroom Goes to the Museum. So, it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled We Forgot Brock. This is Philip and Brock, their best friends. They spend all their time goofing around together. The weird thing is, nobody else can see Brock. Everyone calls him Philip's imaginary friend. Whatever that means. At dinner, Philip might say something like, Brock, would you like some more, please? But his mom only pretends to give Brock seconds. Or sometimes in the driveway, Philip yells, Wait, Dad! Brock has to move his chopper. Please ask Brock to hurry up, Philip's dad will say. Brock can also be really funny. But Philip's parents never get it. One evening, the whole family piled into the car and headed to the big fair. Brock wants us to ride the brain shaker, said Phillips. Tell Brock the brain shaker is a big kid's ride, his dad said. At the big fair, Philip and Brock rode the merry-go-round. First, then the bumper cars, then the tilt-a-whirl. Philip got some cotton candy. Brock didn't want any. He only liked beans and spaghetti. Finally, after the Ferris wheel, Philip got sleepy. But Brock wasn't sleepy at all. It was time to ride the brain shaker. Philip woke up as soon as the car pulled into the driveway. Where's Brock? He yelled. Then he ran inside to see if maybe Brock was already home. But he wasn't. We forgot Brock, Philip sobbed. We forgot Brock. Back at the big fair, Brock couldn't find Philip. He went back on the Ferris wheel for a better view. But he couldn't see Philip anywhere. Are you okay? Somebody asked from above. Brock said he was lost and he wanted to go home. My name is Anne, the little girl said, and this is Princess Sparkle Dust. Would you like to come home with us? So Princess Sparkle Dust, Anne, and Brock all went home together. The next day, Princess Sparkledust and Anne found Brock sitting all by himself. He missed Philip very much. They did magic tricks to cheer him up. Then the three of them began to invent games and tell each other stories. Meanwhile, Philip spent the day looking for Brock. He searched everywhere, but he couldn't find him. Just as Brock was beginning to have a lot of fun, he remembered how much he missed Philip. And just as Philip was about to give up his search, Brock! There he is! Brock introduced Philip to his new friends, Anne and Princess Sparkledust. From then on, Philip, Brock, Anne, and Princess Sparkledust all became best friends. They spent all their time goofing around together. And everything was even better than before. Where Wonder Grows. When Grandma walks to her special garden, we know to follow. This is the place where wonder grows and stories blossom, where we gather our magic rocks and relics from nature. In school, we learn that rocks are things, but Grandma has taught us they are beings. They are alive with wisdom, so we call them grandfathers and grandmothers. She asks us to wonder why this one has so many holes, like secret rooms. We look inside to see molten heat bubbling from the earth's belly, burning new rocks into being. They were here long before us and know more about our world than we ever will. Grandma says that in the Sweat Lodge, they help send songs and prayers through the air to our ancestors. They have survived fire, and so they give us strength. When we're old enough to enter the Sweat Lodge, we'll know exactly what she means. Tell us about the ones with superpowers, we ask. You mean the ones with a healing touch? We're transfixed by the colors of crystals and the glow of Grandma's stories about charanders who can cure the body with white halite, sky blue chelstein, and quartz of all kinds. From its core to its surface, our earth gives us everything we need to survive. After conjuring fire and digging deep within earth, it's time to dive into water. We wonder what wisdom these tiny white forests and houses of shell hold down in the sea, where there is still so much mystery. Water makes and breaks even the biggest rocks very slowly over time. So when life feels too hard, just remember to go with the flow. As the sun quiets, we recall the rocks we love most. Silver beauties who flew from night sky, like freed light dancing on air. We don't know why they came or where they were before, but there is something special in the land we call home, like magnets that draw these marvels from outer space. They remind us how small we are in this big world and how very powerful. When the stars awaken, we rest in our garden, holding our treasures close, and with every breath, we continue to wonder. Eyes that weave the world's wonders. Every year, my family poses for pictures, running and laughing and hugging and jumping and standing and squatting and smiling in matching clothes and matching shoes and matching laughter. Everyone matching in every way, except me. No one in my family has eyes like mine. My mom has eyes like ocean waves, lapping at shores of sand that sparkle as they tumble with the tide. Her eyes fill with fire. When we wander halls of paintings and portraits, sculptures and scenery, she opens them wide and shares her soul with me in thick brushstrokes and fine lines dipped in rainbows of color. When Mom looks at me, it's like she sees me for the first time. Every time, her eyes tell me I'm every wish she whispered into the evening air, a masterpiece more magnificent than the dreams she clung to before I arrived. And this little girl is Asian. My dad has eyes like a summer garden, with golden sunflowers bursting between green leaves, always turning toward the light. His eyes bloom bright when we go to his secret spot where the fish bite best. The stream speaks, the trees chatter, the animals amber by, and my dad says the fish are going to bite today. But his eyes say sharing this moment is magic he treasures more than all the fish in the world. Sometimes our lines get crossed. They twist and turn, and I don't know how to untangle every loop. My dad takes my hand, and his eyes tell me it will be okay. Some knots bind us with bonds, more visible than blood. My parents' eyes don't look like mine, but through them I see a world full of wonder, a world that made us family. Still, I know somewhere there is someone who has eyes that kiss in the corners and glow like warm tea, just like mine. There are trinkets that traveled with me between lives, stories I've been told so many times they've become memories I'm not sure are mine. A one-eyed rabbit with a yellow bow I used to match in size. A handmade hanbok with a sea green skirt and sleeves the colors of sunrise. A cotton white blanket that wrapped me in warmth as I watched myself rise to the skies. I wonder who and where and why and what if and what happened. All I know for sure is that tears can talk, and they tell me sometimes love must look like letting go. I've learned that eyes are for more than matching. I have eyes that spin stories and weave the world's wonders. My eyes fill with fire and bloom bright with light that bends through mist and dew. They're silk strands that soak up the sun and shimmer with the hues of hopes and dreams. I braid into tales only I can tell. My eyes wrap the yarn of every story I know into the stitches of stories I don't. My questions are eyelets through which I tie the whispered wishes of the past to the fearless designs of my future. My eyes that spin stories and weave the world's wonders are connection. They are mom and dad and people I see in my dreams. They are me, and they are wonderful. My code word for when I'm sad or alone. The world outside is shaking. It's growing like an angry lion, snapping like a great white shark. Every day, a piece breaks off, scaring tigers, elephants, and giraffes. I see it on the news, streaming on TVs, laptops, and mama's phone. I see it in magazines, sliding on the table in our home. Mama says the world has lost its mind. It's crashing down, breaking its royal neck. But I want to live my life and forget about this world and all of its regrets. I want to fly a kite I made myself, high up on a hill. I want to swim in coral reefs with turtles and blue tang fish. I want to climb up mountain peaks and watch the world spin far below. I want to sing from center stage, catch roses from the first row. I want to wear a suit and throw my hand up high. I object to the world ending, Your Honor. I have other plans. I want to write a book and draw the pictures, too. I want to fly a plane to Australia to see koala bears and kangaroos. I want to go to college and carry heavy books. I want to find a best friend and whisper, I love you the most. Today, I tell Mama my deepest, darkest worry. The world is going to end, I ask. Do I need to live in a hurry? Mama flicks her laptop closed, turns her phone on silent mode, hugs me close. Oh, sweetie, you'll live your life. Bad things come and go, but don't worry. You are here to live and grow. Mama stands up tall, carves out her famous pineapple boat, fills it with ice cream, and gives me sprinkles to make a rainbow. Find a code word, sweetheart, for your dreams, your hopes, and plans. Find a word that grounds you here when the world starts spinning by. The world cannot end you. If your feet are firmly planted, find a code word to be your lighthouse, to stay safe and calm and grounded. Mom and I eat pineapple boat ice cream as I think of a secret word to shout for when I'm feeling sad and the news is too loud to shut out. I scoop up my last spoonful and point to my pineapple boat. Mama, it is easy. Code word, pineapple, without a doubt. Pineapple is so you, Mama smiles. Strong and prickly on the outside, sweet and tangy on the inside. I have a code word too, she says, and she sings my name out loud. Like she's singing on a mountain peak, or on a stage, or on top of a hill while I fly a kite I made myself. My world is not ending. I am here to live my life. My code word, pineapple, brings back all the light. What is your code word? Emma's Circus. Last fall, my family and I rode into town. And I'm not kidding. You know what we saw? A circus parade just finishing up on Main Street. Oh, please, I begged. We missed the parade. Can we go to the circus? But Daddy shook his head and said, no, there are too many chores to be done on the farm. True, said Mama's sign, still, a sword swallower would have been a sight to see. And the lions, added Granny dreamily. I've always loved lions. I've never even seen a circus, said my big brother Sam. Me neither, I sniffled. Daddy put his arm around me. Sorry, Emma, he said, but with winter coming, there's just no time for a circus. I turned away. I tried not to cry. And that's when I spied a circus bear on a unicycle. And this is the truth. I pinky swear that bear winked at me. The very next morning, the bear pedaled into my yard. Look, Daddy, look, I cried. But he was too busy picking to pay me any mind. So my new friend and I played in the barn all day until Mama hollered, supper! Then the bear hopped on his unicycle and headed away down the lane. Goodbye, I called after him. Come back soon. And I'm telling no fib, the very next morning, that bear did. This time, he brought along two seals with gold horns. "Look, Mama, look," I cried, but she was too busy canning to pay me any mind. So my friends and I played in the barn all day until Mama again hollered, "Supper!" Then the bear hopped on his unicycle, the seals tooted their horns, and they all headed away down the lane. "Goodbye," I called after them. "Come back soon." "And I'm not pulling your leg." The very next morning, they did. This time, they brought along three juggling monkeys. "Look, Granny, look," I cried. But she was too busy quilting to pay me any mind. So my friends and I played in the barn all day until Mama once more hollered, "Supper!" Then the bear hopped on his unicycle. The seals tooted their horns. The monkeys juggled their hoops. And they all headed away down the lane. "Goodbye," I called after them. "Come back soon." And, cross my heart, the very next morning, they did. This time, they brought along four knock-kneed camels. "Look, Sam, look," I cried. But he was too busy chopping to pay me any mind. So my friends and I played in the barn all day until, you guessed it, Mama hollered, "Supper!" Then the bear hopped on his unicycle. The seals tooted their horns. The monkeys juggled their hoops. The camels spat. And they all headed away down the lane. "Goodbye," I called after them. "Come back soon." And this is the downright truth. The very next morning, they did. This time, they brought along five lions, six acrobats, seven sword swallowers, eight elephants, nine clowns, and a 10-piece brass band. "Look, everyone, look," I cried. But my family was too busy working to pay me any mind. So my friends and I played in the barn all day until Daddy flung open the doors. "What's going on in here?" he asked. That was my cue. "Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, step right up to see the amazing, the incredible Emma's Circus." The band gave a drum roll and my friends and I played like we had every day until the last note of music faded away. Clapping like crazy, my family leaped to their feet. "Did you see the sword swallowers?" exclaimed Mama. "What a sight!" "And the lions," squealed Granny. "I love the lions." "By golly, that was the best circus I've ever seen," whooped Sam. "That was the only circus you've ever seen," said Daddy. He grinned. "I sure am glad Emma had time for it," I bowed. Then the bear and the seals and the monkeys and the camels and everyone else packed up their things. They all headed away down the lane. "Goodbye," my family and I called after them. "Come back soon." And would you believe it? One bear, two seals, three monkeys, four camels, five lions, six acrobats, seven sword swallowers, eight elephants, nine clowns, 10-piece brass band. They did. The noisy classroom goes to the museum. "Welcome to my class. This is our teacher, Miss Johnson. Before we go in, I must warn you, we aren't like the other classes. In our class, we sit anywhere we want. I like to read on a beanbag with Maya. When we have to remember something important, we make up a song and rhyme about it. Because of this, the class is always a little noisy. And Miss Johnson is noisy too. She likes to sing loud, and she's always dancing. Some people think Miss Johnson is odd, but we are all a little odd in our own way. On Monday, Miss Johnson is all a flutter. Our first field trip to the Natural History Museum is on Friday, she squeals. How do animal groups work together? These are questions she has on the board. How do these groups adapt to their environment? Why is this important? In order to learn more about animals, we need to conduct research, research, research. Miss Johnson winks at me over her glasses. I give a weak smile back. Miaya points to the crinkle between my eyebrows. I'm worried about the trip, I admit. Why? Maya sighs. I point at Miss Johnson, who is doing a shoulder shimmy. She won't be like that at the museum, Colin chimes in. I want to believe my friends, but that night I brainstormed different ways to sabotage the trip. On Tuesday, I volunteer to place permission slips in student mailboxes. I shove the stack into my backpack instead. But Miss Johnson tells us that there are extra slips on her desk, just in case anyone needs one. I can't do this on my own. I need help. On Wednesday, Maya brings in a flyer. We give it to Miss Johnson. All morning, Miss Johnson frowns at the flyer, and I worry. Before lunch, Miss Johnson announces that she called the museum, and they are open on Friday. Well, that didn't work, Brandon whispers. And the flyer said, museum closed forever. No more field trips. At lunch, we put our heads together again. We question and make predictions, but we can't think of a plan. All afternoon, Miss Johnson sings off tune, and I worry. At home, before I can enter the kitchen, Pa stops me. I think you're forgetting something, he says. When we are in the kitchen, we act like chefs, Ma adds. I race to wash my hands and grab my apron. That's when I get my big, big, big idea. I need to move fast. On Thursday, I share my idea with a group. Animals and humans are alike. They both need to adapt to their environments. We work on our plan in secret. We tell Miss Johnson that we invented a game about animals. She is instantly excited. Miss Johnson loves games. We ask her if we can play the game on the trip. She said yes. On Friday, before we head into the crowded streets, Miss Johnson stands in front of the line and waits for our instructions. Act like a paddling of ducks, I tell everyone. We maneuver through the city in a tight line, with Miss Johnson leading the paddle and occasionally quacking. This makes all the students and some of the pedestrians laugh. On the subway platform, we decide to be a pack of wolves. Our plan is working. We board the train as a pack and ride downtown to the museum. Miss Johnson winks over her glasses and jots something in her notebook. During the trip, we act like different animals. When we meet our tour guide, we act like a quiet mob of meerkats as we travel through the massive building. When we break into research groups, we pretend to be a leap of leopards and camouflage into our settings. As we move to the next exhibit, I notice Miss Johnson writing something in her notebook again. On the way back to school, we act like a school of fish, moving swiftly back uptown. I ask Miss Johnson what she's been writing in her notebook. She hands it to me, and I gasp. She was on to us the whole time. Number one, make an observation. Two, pose a question. Three, give a prediction. Four, make a plan. Five, test your plan. Six, use information to make a new plan. Seven, continue until the question is solved. Back at school, Miss Johnson congratulates us for having a successful trip. We play freeze dance. In between poses, my group and I silently celebrate. We did it! A trip with Miss Johnson, and no drama. Before we are dismissed, Miss Johnson has an announcement. Since we had such a good time, I think we should take another trip. Oh no, here we go again. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bomick, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for about 5 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Darcy believes in love at first sight. She spent her whole life waiting for that perfect magical moment. But right now, her life is anything but perfect. After a music festival, she's stranded at a bus station until morning, the day before she leaves for college. Her phone is dead, she has no cash, and she's convinced nothing good can come of this night. But then she meets Russell. Russell, cute and nice, funny and kind. This is the moment and the guy she's been waiting for. And they have until sunrise to walk and talk and connect. Over the course of this one fateful night, filled with football field picnics, night swimming, and escaped artist dogs, Darcy and Russell's lives will change forever. They'll discover things they never imagined about each other and about themselves. But can you really know someone after only a handful of hours? Is it possible to fall in love in just one day? And is it worth saying hello when you know you're destined for a goodbye? Okay, last week, as Darcy was finally leaving the mansion, she got a call from her mother, Jillian, who received a call from Noah Wiley's lawyer explaining the swimming pool incident. Initially, Darcy was irritated, but realized her mom really cares about her. And they both ended the call. And that's where I left off last week. But the phone remained silent, and I could practically see it in my mind. Jillian setting the phone on her nightstand, getting back into bed, murmuring an apology to Anthony, not giving this another thought. I ran my hands through my hair and took a shaky breath. I was fine. I was more than fine. I was figuring things out on my own. I didn't need her. Really? Katie whispered, her voice gentle. And that was all it took. The tears spilled over, and I put my hands over my eyes and cried. I didn't care in that moment that I was sobbing in the driveway of an international celebrity. I gave up on caring if anyone saw me because there was no stopping this. I was crying for my mom and all that I'd wanted and hadn't gotten, and how exhausting it was to pretend that I didn't need her or want her when it was a flimsy lie that wasn't even fooling me. I was crying for the way that even when she was saying all the right things, I couldn't trust that she meant it. I was crying for the way I'd spoken to her and how I already regretted it. I cried for me and for Russell, and the way it felt like we'd come close to something real, something special, for just a moment tonight before it all fell apart. I cried for the fear and exhaustion of the last 3 days, having to be so vigilant while Rami got to run off and do whatever she wanted because she knew that I would be there holding down the fort and picking up the pieces. I cried for the way college already felt ruined and tainted, and for how I wasn't excited and optimistic about it like my friends. Like this was just one more thing I didn't get. I cried because of the mess I'd made of everything and the way I felt so trapped. And finally, I cried because I was tired and cold and hungry and alone. And there were rocks digging into my legs. I was just starting to pull it together a little when I felt something small and soft climb into my lap, and I froze. Andy, the dog, who'd managed to escape again, was looking up at me. Chapter 11, Sunday, 11 o'clock p.m. Hi, I said. I ran my hand over the dog's head and just left it there for a moment. God, he was a comfort right now. I took a shaky breath and tried to pull myself together, running my hand over his ears. When I moved it, they popped straight up again. I pushed my hand down again to flatten them, then lifted it up. After a moment, Andy's ears sprang back up, and I laughed for what felt like the first time in hours. I gave him one more pet, then pushed myself up to standing, lifting the dog with me. I moved the tent and the duffel onto the fake grass so they wouldn't be in the way in case anyone needed to drive out, then picked up my canvas bag and started the long walk up the driveway. I wasn't sure how to get the dog back into the house. The last thing I wanted was to ring the Darcy doorbell, interrupt dinner, make a big fuss. But by the time I'd passed the balloon dog sculpture, I could see Chloe standing on the front steps. I waved, incredibly relieved that I could just hand Andy off and go. The dog got out again, I called as I held him up, like she needed proof. Huh, weird. She seemed so unsurprised by this, I figured it must happen a lot. She opened the door and stepped through. Let's get him in. I'd been thinking I'd just hand him to her on the steps, but she was already in the foyer, so I didn't see any choice but to follow her back inside. She shut the door once I was in, and I handed the dog back to her. Good boy, she murmured to Andy before setting him down. He immediately tore off in the direction of the kitchen. I wasn't going to say anything to Chloe, but honestly, no wonder this dog was always escaping if he was getting these mixed messages. Thanks for bringing him back, Chloe said. Then her eyes widened as she looked at me. Oh my God! I looked down and remembered what I was wearing. Oh, right. I can turn it inside out? No, it's just that I can't believe he ever thought that hair was the way to go. Her smile faltered as she took a step closer to me. Are you okay? I'm fine, I said automatically, but I just cried harder than I had in years. Of course, it was going to show up on my face. I'm not sure you are. No, I'm good. My voice was getting high and tight, the way it always did when I was lying. But luckily, Chloe didn't know that. I kind of think you're lying. I've already taken up way too much of your time. I'll just get an Uber to the bus station? She made each of these things sound increasingly unappealing. Yes. Last bus to L.A. leaves at midnight. It's half an hour from here to the Strip. More if there's traffic. Maybe you'll make it if you leave right now. But the closest Uber is 20 minutes away. She showed me her phone and my heart sank as I looked at the distant lack of cars around our little dot on the map. Oh, well, that's okay. I can just wait all night at the bus station. Well, it's what I was going to do, and Jesse, I pointed out, Russell, too. We were going to wait there until the bus came at 7. Yeah, at a bus station in Bumblefuck, Nevada? You want to wait all night at a Vegas bus station? I shifted my feet, not quite sure how to get out of this. But I did know the longer we debated logistics, the small window for making the midnight bus to California was going to close. I mean, maybe I can get there by midnight. You can't, her voice was definitive. And I really don't want to send you there and then you get murdered, and the guilt of it haunts me my whole life. You could probably get a good true crime podcast out of it, though. Chloe laughed at that loudly, like I'd surprised her. Just stay here. We've got more than enough rooms. One of the guest houses is just sitting empty. You can have your own space. We won't bother you. Get a good night's sleep, and then we can drive you to the bus station in the morning. That's really generous of you, but I can't ask you to do that. You didn't ask me. I offered. So you'll stay? I mean, I looked around and discovered that it is very hard to come up with rational excuses when you're surrounded by Picassos and half-naked sci-fi portraits. I shook my head. Russell, Chloe waved her hand in a gesture that somehow managed to be dismissive, but not unkind. Leave him to me. I'd really feel a lot better if you stayed. As I stood there in the foyer, the thought of a hot shower, a soft bed, things I hadn't had in days, was too tempting to pass up. I could take a moment to breathe, pull myself together, and if Russell thought it was weird that I was here, well, I would never have to see him again after tomorrow. It's really kind of you. Chloe shook her head. It's nothing, and besides, I had to make it up to you. I heard you were dragged in front of CJ. She gave me a look that let me know she understood exactly what I'd gone through with the lawyer. So you'll stay? I nodded. After all, wasn't this what I'd just wished for? Sobbing out on the driveway? Someone to take me in hand, make things okay, take care of me? I'll stay. Thank you so much. I left my stuff. I'll get someone to grab it. She grinned at me and clapped her hands together. This will be fun. Let's get you set up. I'd been worried that it might be awkward to go back into the house after I'd left it. But it was like Chloe wasn't allowing for this possibility, like she was bending the situation to her will. We walked back into the main room, where everyone was sitting around the dining room table with half-eaten plates in front of them, laughing and talking. Artie on Sydney's lap, his face covered in sauce. Neither Russell or Wiley was there. And, clocking their absence, I felt some of the tension leave my shoulders. Andy got out again, Chloe said, as she breezed past the dining room table, me following in her wake. Darcy got him, though. She's staying here tonight. What? Wallace asked, looking up from his plate, but Montana gave me a wink. Good work, Darcy. Come back here and play fishbowl when you're all settled. Before I could answer that, Chloe was opening a glass door and stepping into the backyard, and I hurried to follow. The backyard was just as stunning as the front. The pool was huge and ringed with loungers and round covered chairs that seemed like mini cabanas. There was a connected hot tub bubbling away. Bobbing in the pool was a huge float that seemed to be a punk rock unicorn with wings, and a smaller circular float that looked like a bagel with a schmear. Striped towels were flung over the lounge chairs and the big circular chairs, but there were also baskets all around the perimeter with neatly rolled up towels inside them. There was a huge hulking piece of black metal to the side of the pool, which I was pretty sure was a Richard Sierra. Darcy! Yeah, I said, hurrying to catch up with Chloe. I hadn't known what to expect when I heard guest house, but not this. It was one of the five guest houses ringing the backyard, and the one I'd be staying in was a little smaller than our house in Raven Rock, but honestly, not by much. It looked like a one-story version of the main house, all wood and glass and sharp angles. There were three steps up and a small porch in front with two Adirondack chairs facing the pool. Chloe headed inside and I followed. It was a proper house. We were in the living room with a couch and a TV, an open-plan kitchen behind it. There was a hallway where I assumed the bedrooms and bathroom were. Wiley misses being on tour, so he named all the guest houses after his favorite places and decorated them accordingly. This one is Bleecker Street in the Village. I was about to ask what she meant by that, what village, but then I took in the decor and realized all at once that she meant New York City. Hanging above the couch was a large framed poster for Metropolitan. All over the walls were photographs and sketches of the city. There was even a huge old-fashioned looking metal sign hanging in the kitchen that read, H&H Bagels, New York's Finest. Even the furniture seemed to somehow say New York, though I wouldn't have known that was a way to describe something until I saw it. The couch and chairs were a dark, soft-looking leather, and there were dark red woven rugs on the wooden floors. Everything was angular and cool. It certainly no longer seemed like we were in the middle of the desert outside Las Vegas. "What?" Chloe asked. "Is it okay?" Because normally I could move you, but the other guest houses are occupied at the moment. Unforch, Montana, and Pariah are staying in Hannah Highway, and Kenya and Doug are in Beale Street. "No, are you kidding? It's amazing. It's a whole house." "I know, much nicer than any house I ever lived in before I met Wiley." She crossed into the kitchen and I followed. There was a large basket of snacks and fruit on the counter, and just seeing it, I felt how hungry I was. But I didn't know how this worked. Was I allowed to have these snacks? I was basically a pity guest. They were probably reserved for important visitors. Chloe opened the fridge and pulled out a glass bottle. "Topo Chico?" I nodded. She took out two, opened them both, then slid one across the kitchen counter to me. "So," I said after I took a long drink, letting my canvas bag rest between my feet. My mind was turning over what she'd just told me about who was staying where, not to mention what I'd seen back in the house. Now that I was going to be here for a bit, my curiosity was starting to get the better of me. "How does it all work?" Chloe reached into the snack basket and pulled out a bag of chips. I was relieved to see that it would apparently be okay for me to eat something from it too. "How does what work?" She opened the bag and held it out to me. I ate three, salt and vinegar, very good, then wiped my hands on my jean shorts. "Well, that Kenya and Doug are here? And Paula too? And you?" I thought, but did not say, but she seemed to be living here? Co-parenting with her ex-husband? And somehow on good terms with Wiley and his kids, many of whom were older than her, and his ex-wives. She nodded as she crunched down on a chip and then shook the bag. "You think it's weird that we're all here together?" "Well, yeah." Chloe laughed, and I felt myself relax a little. Her phone beeped, and she pulled it out of her sweatpants pocket. "Astrid's awake now, too. I swear the kids know the second I'm out of the house." Do you need to check on her?" I didn't want to be the one who was taking up her time, even though she didn't seem like she was in any kind of a hurry to leave. "Oh, I'm sure she's fine, and if she's not, there are a ton of people who can help. It's the benefit to all of us being together." She plucked another chip from the bag. "That's what you were asking, right? How we manage to do it? Well, I've just never known about something like this, that's all. It's not what I would have expected." I mean, normally, there aren't this many of us. We turn the festival into an occasion to all get together. But we do try to get together as much as we can. Wiley was very clear about it from the beginning. Said he had no interest in siloed families. Everyone's separate. He likes siblings to be in each other's lives, even if they don't all have the same parents. He likes the noise and the chaos, everyone running around together and getting into trouble. Well, I can see that with the kids, I said slowly, but their mode of living just seemed so separate from anything I'd seen in my own family or in my friends' families who were divorced, that I didn't quite understand how it was happening. Wiley just says that if you choose to partner with someone, it was for a reason. He was clear with me about the time he spends with his exes, all of the kids, and we all make it work. She arched an eyebrow and leaned forward like she was about to give me the gossip. I leaned in to get it. Sometimes it works a little too well. In Paula's case.
You mean?
Yeah, Wiley and Paula got back together, she said with a laugh, after we were divorced. We joke that he's had so many wives, he's back around to the first one. And it's better, honestly. He needs to be with someone his own age. He was getting tired of me, not knowing who Burt Lancaster is.
Was.
And everyone just gets along? Well, I mean, for the most part, like anything worth doing, you have to work at it. It doesn't just happen, and his ex, Candace, hates him. As you've probably read, she's not on board with any of this. But for the most part, it just works. I nodded slowly, trying to process this, that a millionaire rock star with a string of exes and a passel of kids could have these functional, happy relationships. But me and my dad were totally separate from Jillian and her new family, and I didn't know my half-siblings at all. Well, Dee Dee chimed in, you've also never really tried? What? Chloe asked, and I realized she was looking at me closely, like she was reading something on my face. Oh, nothing. I was just thinking about how I wasn't sure that would be possible for me. With my mom's new husband and family, I mean, Chloe nodded, crunched down on another chip, and held the bag out to me. I'd just taken a bite when she asked, was that who you were yelling at in the driveway? It looked like mom yelling. You saw me? I felt a dull flash creep into my cheeks. I just hoped that it was only Chloe and not the entire household. Why do you think I sent Andy out to get you? You what? I mean, he has an actual problem. Don't get me wrong. He's always trying to make a break for it, but he's also a soft touch, and I knew you'd do the right thing and bring him back. I finished my chip as I processed this. For a second, I tried to figure out if I was angry about it, then decided I wasn't. Chloe had used the dog suffrage for good, and now that I was here and seeing where I was going to be staying tonight, I was grateful for it. Well, thanks. I know a mom fight when I see one, she said, setting down the chips and rooting around in the basket, finally coming up with an apple. It's our most complex and primal relationship. I raised my eyebrows at that, and she laughed. Sorry, my psych major is showing. Psych major? Chloe nodded, looking proud and a little nervous. Yeah, I just started at UNLV. Just part-time, though. You do have a very small child, I pointed out. Two of them, even. You'll meet Astrid in the morning. Chloe looked at the apple critically, set it down, and pulled out a chocolate bar. Much better. She held the bar out to me, and I broke myself off a square. She grinned at me, and I was struck again by just how young she looked. I started, cramming a piece of chocolate in my mouth to get my courage up. What? Can I ask, how old are you? Sorry if that's rude. Chloe laughed. I'm 24. I don't think it'll be rude for 15 years or so. I nodded and broke myself off another piece of chocolate. Jillian had been 24 when she had me. And even though my dad had always talked about how young they had both been, I'd always shrugged this off. 24 seemed adult, but looking at Chloe now, it was hitting me for the first time what that had meant for my dad, for Jillian. Needing to think about something else just for a moment, I nodded back toward the main house. Do you think Russell will be okay? Is he in big trouble? Chloe grimaced. Russell normally never gets in trouble. He's the kid Wiley worries about the least, not like Montana. She and Wiley could probably have a fight in shorthand by this point. But Russell and Wiley? It's new to them. I bet they're not having a fun conversation right now. She tucked her hair behind her ears. Something happened at the festival right before Wiley's set. I saw the two of them arguing, and then after, she sighed, I don't know what happened, but they were both upset. And then we couldn't find Russell. He disappeared. He texted Connor that he wasn't coming back with us, and he was going to L.A. on his own. But we didn't know how or where he was. Wiley was not happy, but he also refused to tell us what they were fighting about. I nodded, thinking back to the times that Russell had allotted to the friend he'd come to Silverspun with, the one who he'd been fighting with, who was, it turned out, his dad. And then, a few hours ago, Chloe went on, Connor got another text from him. He said that he was okay and not to worry, that things were good with him, with like 8 smiley faces. That did not go over well on our end, let me tell you. But then, soon after that, Russell was calling Wiley and saying he was about to be arrested and needed help. She pushed herself off the counter and shrugged. So, all in all, I'd say they have some things to work out. And unfortunately, this is where I'm going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the novel, The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.